Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 9th canto, chapter 19, entitled King Yayati Achieves Liberation, text 25. Satatra nirmukta samasta sangha.
Satatra nirmukta samasta sangha.
Armana guccha vidutta trilinga.
Armana guccha vidutta trilinga.
Pare male brahmani vasudeve.
Pare male brahmani vasudeve.
Deve gatim bhagavatim pratittaha.
Deve gatim bhagavatim pratittaha.
Saha.
Saha.
Maharajayati.
Maharajayati.
Tatra.
Tatra.
Upon doing this.
Upon doing this.
Nirmukta.
Nirmukta.
Was immediately liberated from.
Was immediately liberated from.
Samasta Sangha.
Samasta Sangha.
All contamination.
All contamination.
Atmana Bhuccha.
Atmana Bhuccha.
Simply by understanding.
Simply by understanding.
His constitutional position.
His constitutional position.
Viduta.
Viduta.
Was cleansed of.
Was cleansed of.
Trilinga.
Trilinga.
The contamination.
The contamination.
Caused by the three modes of material nature.
Caused by the three modes of material nature.
Sattva-gun, Rajagun, and Tamagun.
Sattva-gun, Rajagun, and Tamagun.
Pare.
Pare.
Unto the transcendence.
Unto the transcendence.
Amale.
Amale.
Without material contact.
Without material contact.
Brahmani,
Brahmani,
the Supreme Lord,
the Supreme Lord.
Vasudeva,
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 Krishna,
Krishna,
the Absolute Truth,
the Absolute Truth.
Bhagavan,
Bhagavan,
Leve,
Leve,
achieved,
Gatim,
the
destination,
Bhagavatim,
Bhagavatim,
as an associate of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Pratita, famous. Translation. Because King Yayati completely surrendered unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vasudeva, he was free from all contamination of the material modes of nature. Because of his self-realization, he was able to fix his mind upon the transcendence, Parabrahman Vasudeva, and thus he ultimately achieved the position of an associate of the Lord. Good point. The word viduta, meaning cleansed, is very significant. Everyone in this material world is contaminated. Karanam guna sangusya. Because we are in a material condition, we are contaminated either by satva-gun, by rajagun, or tamagun. Even if one becomes a qualified brahman in the mode of goodness, satva-gun, he's still materially contaminated. One must come to the platform of Sudha-sattva, transcending the sattva-guna. Then one is viduta-trilinga, cleansed of the contamination caused by the three modes of material nature. This is possible by the mercy of Krishna, as stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.17. Srimad-bhagavatam-svakata-krishnam-punya-sravana-kirtana vidhyanta-stuvi-abhidhani-vidhunati-suritsatam. Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, who is the Paramatma, Supersoul in everyone's heart, and the benefactor of the truthful devotee, cleanses desire for material enjoyment from the heart of the devotee, who has developed the urge to hear some messages, which are in themselves virtues when properly heard and chanted. A person trying to be perfectly Krishna conscious by hearing the words of Krishna from Srimad Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita certainly has all the dirty things cleansed from the core of his heart. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also says, Chaitadarpanam, the process of hearing and chanting the glories of the Supreme Lord. Washes away the dirty things accumulated in the core of the heart. As soon as one is freed from all the dirt of material contamination, as Maharajayati was, one's original position as an associate of the Lord is revealed. This is called Swarup Siddhi. or personal perfection. Scriptures say prema pumarti mahan, or the goal of the human form of life, is to attain love of God. It's interesting that Srila Prabhupada, rather than emphasizing that verse and quoting it again and again reminds us that the goal of life is to go back to Godhead. And these two are not entirely the same in one way, and in another way, they are the same. Because when we go back to Godhead, then surely we will be freed from all material contamination. Because in the spiritual world, it's not possible to have traces of material desire and so on. There is no material desire in the spiritual world. So going back to Godhead means we return to our original perfect state. But it may not really happen in now, in while we are engaged in devotional service in the material world. Because even if there are traces of material desire remaining in our heart, or material contamination, even if we still remain covered, even if we don't know actually what our original constitutional relationship is with Krishna, if we leave this body and we have satisfied Krishna by our service, he may take us back to the spiritual world. And then, somewhere on the way, we become purified. We find descriptions that sometimes a devotee takes birth in a universe where Krishna is performing his pastimes, and there, in that relationship with Krishna, becomes purified of the last remnants of material contamination, and then goes back to Godhead. Other times, we find description that this very life, one will go back to Godhead by the mercy of Guru and Gauranga. So, both of these paths are there, and both of them are described by Srila Prabhupada at different points in time. Here we're seeing the example of Yayati, who finally surrendered at the end of his life. That is a very great thing to do, and many times we have made dramatic declarations, now I'll surrender. Today we decided I'll be a devotee. That was the day when we said, now I'll surrender. Then at the time of initiation, now I'll surrender. On that day, we feel very kind of surrendered. Really, very, give my whole life and my heart and soul. And then after a while, it comes back to reality. We meet ourselves, and we realize we were not so surrendered. So what to do? Sometimes we speak about artificial renunciation, or artificially giving up material attachments. Is that all right? Or can one just give up? Or does one first have to be materially exhausted? Janmaiswarya Sutta Sribhya Idamana Madhapumam Naivariti Avidatum by Tom Akinchana Gocharam. Kuti Devi describes what it means to be materially exhausted. She says that as long as you have any desire to enjoy a position of aristocratic birth, to enjoy material wealth, to enjoy material learning and material beauty, then one cannot approach the Supreme Lord with sincere feeling. Rather, one must be materially exhausted. Akinchana gocharam. There is a similar verse, Niskinchanasya Bhagavan Bhajanam Mukhasya, which is explaining that one must be Niskinchan. One must be just free from any desire to enjoy the material energy. But easier said than done. Right? Easier said than done. And to be akinchana gochara or niskinchan, to be really materially exhausted, how to get there? So then, if one is not, should one just look for a position in Varnashram? Since that is dealing with material conditioning, and should we just situate ourselves nicely in Varnashram and serve Krishna from that position? Well, as long as the pleasing Krishna element is there, yes, then that is a good idea. Because if we have no ashram, some people have no ashram. They are basically, they're bachelors or something like that, but not really brahmacharis. They have a flat with a microwave and and all the other comforts of life, but no wife. So sometimes scripture calls them grihasthas without a wife. Householders without a wife, like that. Ultimately, one must choose an ashram when one is a conditioned soul, because there one's material desires become regulated, and when material desires become regulated, and there is a regulated way of expressing them, then we are on a path of gradually rising above the lower modes of nature. Because Varnashram is designed as such that we gradually attain the mode of goodness, and then, well, then gradually we can develop our desire to please Krishna. Pleasing Krishna is visuddhisattva. When we have no other desire than to please Krishna. Pleasing Krishna means also that our behavior has changed fully to what Krishna likes. So we act like a devotee and so on. That is, so we're following that now. But then we get the mercy of devotional service. So all right, we have our regulated situation in the Vajra Ashram, and that gives us some sort of safety. It gives that little island. Sometimes someone says that, I wish there was like a little place in this world where the material influence wasn't there. Just somewhere, a place where Maya wasn't there. That would become very crowded. All the devotees would move there. Skyscrapers and so on. But in a way, Varna Ashram is meant to help, at least provide some safety for Maya. Because there are codes, and one just accepts those codes of behavior, and one follows that. And no matter what, Varna Ashram brings principles. It's based on principles. And we have the principles for the ashram. And when we follow these principles, irregardless of what the external circumstances bring about, then the ashram will just protect us. It's as simple as that. It's about principles. It's not about cloth per se and the color of cloth, but it's about principles that we apply. And these principles, they're never compromised. And that's the strength. That's the strength. They're just not compromised. That's Varnashram. So that's nice. But it's not that one is loving every day of his life within Varnashram. Sometimes it's duty, heavy duty. Sometimes it's very austere to live that life, and therefore one is weak. But devotional service is very different, especially Sankirtan, because Lord Chaitanya, being the Yuga avatar, predominates everything. His influence is everywhere, and therefore now it's this Sankirtan that is giving the potency and is attracting the mercy, and that mercy, yes, that can suddenly make everything very nice and very blissful and take it beyond austerity. Varnashram is in a way about austerity, and then one comes to goodness, and there is a certain satisfaction in being in the mode of goodness. But it's all, one is still not fulfilled, even in goodness. Externally, we situate ourselves. And that is the beginning of surrender. To externally situate ourselves in Varnashram, in the association of devotees, in the process of devotional service. And then the other thing is mercy. Mercy comes as a reciprocation of Krishna. And for mercy, one, yes, Krishna may give. And he gives everyone some mercy. There is no doubt about it. Every devotee gets some mercy sometimes. But if we want to really to be an ecstatic devotee, yes, then we have to try and do something really extraordinary for Krishna. And that means sarvopadi vinirmuktam tatparatvena nirmanam risikena risikesa sevanam bhakti uchite. Then you have to give up the upadi. Then you have to give up the designation. Then naham vipranatanara patir napi vaishiva sudra naham varnina chakriya patir nova vanastiyatir vakintu projana kira parmanam narita te gopi patapati malayo dasana dasana. Yes, that's then the next stage. No position in Varnashram. Going beyond, giving up all upadis, giving up all designation, just whatever Krishna needs. It's Krishna's need that becomes the criterion, not my nature, not my inclination, no, whatever Krishna needs, that's what I want to do. Right. And of course, the need is clear. Sansara dhavana vidita loka tranaya karya kana kanatvam. The nava vidita loka, you know what that means? It means that the people who are afflicted, they're afflicted by material misery, sansara dhava, nadavita loka. There's this blazing forest fire of material existence and the people that are afflicted by that. Tanaya. Tanaya means to deliver. Tanaya karunya kanakanatvam. Then the merciful spiritual master appears like a rain cloud, and extinguishing that fire by rain. So, forest fires are beyond control. That's the thing. There's nothing you can do to bring it under control. It's all you can do is run away. It's like there's no such thing as I'll blow it out, or bring the garden hose. Are going to save the forest. That doesn't quite work. So samsara dhavana lila-loka is sort of indicating that we're totally overpowered by the material energy. And what can we do about it? Not much. So it's that mercy. So that comes from putting our self-interest aside. So we're doing both. First we situate ourselves according to our nature very carefully. What ashram shall I choose? And then, we have ourselves in a nice ashram and everything is there. And all your desire is manifest in a border. Or in the absence of one. Everything just in a small thing. So opportunity is there to accommodate material desire. But from time to time, we have to just forget about it. Maybe not all the time. We rest in our varnashram as much as we can. But then we venture out. Then we jump on our white horse and big heroes and try and do something. Ultimately. Something for Krishna consciousness. So some people, in a spirit of heroism, sit down behind a computer and start typing and build a website or make a Facebook page. And from the safety of their room, they're reaching out to all the demons in the material world. Or others, they go on the street where you really get it in 3D, Everything smells and all. It's in your face. I feel really surrendered. I don't want that book. Nectar. Really getting some mercy here. In this way. And the mind is feeling, yes, I am surrendered. Yes. And immediately we feel so much better. Oh yes, I'm like great Sankirtan hero. Like that. We are going out in the world, but then again, the moments of material nature get us. The transcendental moment is over. It rains buckets, your socks are wet, it's cold, and you're fried to a crisp, and you just want to go home. And you can't wait for Christmas because then you have an excuse. 2-3 days, you can just go home and just be your old self. Almost. Watch TV, check out the fridge, all these things. Yes. Those little comforts of life that are sometimes missing. So many hidden ways so many hidden ways to still satisfy the senses and the mind. Externally surrendered. Surrender to an ashram, surrender to a service, surrender to a guru, surrender to chant 16 rounds, but in between, still finding space for the mind, still finding space for the senses. Although it's a small thing, as I said, a border, you know, but, yeah. Or the renounced approach. In the Greek mythology, there is the story of Diogenes and Plato. Right? And it is explained that Plato was not so renounced. He lived in a nice house and he had silken cushions and everything was quite comfy, actually. Diogenes was very renounced. He lived in a rain barrel, which is kind of austere. So one day, Diogenes, he just ran, he walked with his feet through a mud pool, went into the house of Plato, and jumped with his muddy feet all over the silken cushions, and made a total mess, and then said, "I'm stamping on the pride of Plato." And Plato said, with the same pride. So that was not bad. Kind of a good point. We can relate to that. So here we are. Pride. Oh gosh. How will we ever get rid of it? The mind finds some space. The intelligence finds ways. And somehow or other we're looking to surrender and simultaneously get our sense enjoyment. It's very difficult. No, really, it's a huge puzzle to somehow or other figure it out, right? But we all managed to do it. And this is called a niche, you know. One must find his niche in Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, you know, we're going to survive. Whatever it is. And then, yes, that little bit of sense gratification becomes everything. Because it's the last little bit of sense gratification that we have. We've given up so much. So that little bit becomes very important, whatever it is. So surrender is such a thing. It's quite a topic. Anyway, so this is a combination of surrender is there's no such thing as just walking in and surrendering. Yeah? It's possible, theoretically, to surrender in one moment, but who does that? So surrender is an ongoing process. It's a process, step by step. Okay, I'm going to surrender in this situation. I'm going to surrender in the next situation, surrender again and again. But then, you get these circles, you know, the comfort circle, the stretching circle, and the pain circle, and that's also a reality. Yeah. I mean, if you go too much in the pain circle, then you need to be in the comfort circle for a long time. If you push yourselves beyond the limit. So, here we are. But stretching, we must stretch. We must stretch. Regularly stretch. Surrender is about stretching. Therefore, we have Naimitika Kriya. We have Nitya Kriya and Naimitika Kriya. So the process of devotional service has this stretching element built in Naimitika Kriya. Nitya Kriya is part of bhajana kriya. It is said, first we get adobh, shraddha, then sadhu sangha, then anartha nivritti, bhajana kriya, and then anartha nivritti. So bhajana kriya is the process. We adjust to the process, start to follow the process. Process has these two elements. The grind, it's the grind, the everyday duty.
that never disappears, and that's just always there, whether you want it or not. The grind. It's difficult. Right. Again, same old thing. And then Naimittika Kriya, the special thing. The 64 rounds, or maybe something else. The 64 books. And in the one devotee, every Jamastami, 128 Gitas and 128 rounds. For many years now, and somehow or other, every year he does it again. 128, I don't know how, but he does it. 128 Gitas and 128 rounds. Every Jamastami, that's his Jamastami. But he does the rest of the year, I won't tell you. But Jamastami goes on. Right? He's somehow or other. So, such an intense focus. Right? And then it works, then it starts to work. Right? It's like if you're really convinced, I'm going to distribute this book, I'm going to do it. Then somehow or other you're going to do it. Then it's going to work. But one has to believe it. That's the one thing. If you believe it, you'll do it. If you don't believe it, you won't do it. As simple as that. Anyway, this was a little bit about surrender and where we are encountering our limits. So when you read about Maharajayati who completely surrendered, then you sort of, well, if I apply that to myself, then it's sort of go like, well, that's very nice that Yayati did that. I mean, but then what? You know, then what do I do with this? It's difficult to just take that sentence and apply it to myself because I haven't completely surrendered. Now what? Now the next thing is, all right, let's. Let's raise the bar. That's one approach. And I mean, if you have to jump high, okay, you practice, and then after a while, you raise the bar. Yeah. That's one way to force yourself to surrender. So we have to put ourselves in conditions that force ourselves to surrender. Therefore, you take some responsibility. Okay. I agree, I'll do it. Of course, you know, before they asked you to do the service, you're like, oh my God, like, why did they ask me this? I don't really want to do it. But then, like, okay, I'll do it. Well, now we've just raised the bar. We've just created circumstances in our life that make it more difficult. So we have to do that. But within reason. Cannot be artificial. Cannot be too much. Abhyasa yoga yuktena, by regular practice. So in this way, we try, and then where we fall short, that's where we pray to Lord Chaitanya. Because that's the one thing that Yayati doesn't have. Lord Chaitanya. And it's a big difference. You know? That's a big difference. So, Yayati, how he did it, how he went from being so attached to sex life to becoming completely surrendered, it's just amazing. That's just quite amazing. But he did it. Anyway, we'll try also. We'll try. Not just by saying, I'll try, not just by sentimentally getting into the mood. Try to surrender now. I feel much more surrendered these days. I really do. You know, I'm a changed man, you know. Raise the bar. You're a changed man? Okay, raise the bar. Prove it. Otherwise, it's just sentiment.
that one too. You have to raise the bar. And so in that way we can gradually approach a state of surrender. And then we do some service for Srila Prabhupada and we get mercy. Just like so many devotees reported book scores this morning, and that was really nice because Prabhupada smiles upon all of you for trying to do something in this matter, and for that, you know, you'll get mercy, and that mercy suddenly will make it possible to surrender. So it's not that we get the mercy once, we get drops of mercy, and then what was not possible becomes possible. So we should look for these opportunities to get some mercy. Then we can start doing things that were otherwise impossible. And that's the whole principle of spiritual life, because it's impossible to start off with. I mean, the whole four regulative principles are impossible. Let's be real. It's impossible. But it becomes possible if we start looking for mercy. Therefore, devotees become mercy hunters. Any mercy? Anywhere, any mercy, go for it. Go for it, whatever it is. Go for the mercy. Because by mercy, we get the strength. Okay, I'll stop now. Any questions? Any comments? Shalom.
Well, you spoke so nicely about stretching ourselves and raising the bar. And you also made the point that if we stretch too far, then we need to spend a long time in the comfort zone. Can you say something about how we would know if we're warning signs that we're stretching ourselves too much, and then we're drawing inside our comfort zone, and it'll come out for a while. Can you say something about that? How much to stretch ourselves? How will we know if it's too much or too little?
Yeah, well, we must begin to accept some of the practices of devotional service and fix ourselves. One must fix himself in a fixed number of rounds. So that's the beginning. Fix ourselves. So it's about fixing ourselves. Fix ourselves in chanting, fix ourselves in service, fix ourselves in ashram. One must fix himself. And then once we have been fixed in a particular situation for a while, then we can raise the bar. And then we fix ourselves on that level. And we keep it for a while, and then we can again raise the bar. So, like that. It's like the story of the Gujarati girl who was asked if she could carry this little calf up the stairs. Her father asked, "Can you carry this calf up the stairs?" She did. She put the calf on her shoulders, carried the calf up the stairs. After 1 year, she was carrying a bull on the stairs. Little Gujarati girl. Gujarati story. They're not big girls, you know. But serious bulls. So, abhyasa yoga, practice. But practice means almost fix himself. Fix himself. In something. Fix ourselves. Now I'm going to be a Brahmin. Fix myself. Baka. Fix oneself. And brahminical qualities. Fix oneself. So this fixing is the idea. And after we maintain that, then we can raise the bar. It goes on and on. But then, as you raise the bar, you have to do more to maintain it. It's like we we used to do some retreats in the Drakensberg, and then we made everyone work really hard to like make special darshans of the deities. And one year in the Jhumna Maharaj came upon my request, and then he introduced his deities to the devotees, and I mean, I asked him to do that, and then he explained everything about the deities. And he got so fired up about sharing his deities with the devotees that the next morning he shared his puja with the devotees. And it's like 300 devotees were all part of his puja. And, well, it was interesting because, I mean, he is like, his puja is sort of, well, everybody knows that the Swami is into his puja for a long, long time, and is quite has a very high standard. So he's checking it all out, and I even noticed he played a soundtrack, and even in the soundtrack there was a whole sequence. I remember that of like going through through Guru, going through the associates of Lord Chaitanya, going through Nityananda, going to, and all the bhajans were sort of slowly, slowly bringing him to Vrindavan. It was very interesting. So, step by step, step by step. And then I said, Maharaj, that was like 2 hours. I said, are you doing that every day? He said, like, well, I gotta do something. I gotta do something, you know, to be Krishna conscious. Yeah, that's the point. You don't get it for nothing. Right? You can't be in the Jhumna Maharaj for nothing. There's a price to pay. Yeah, if you want to be in the Jhumna Maharaj, you can. You can be. But you have to pay a price.
Because I think if one doesn't acknowledge the baby steps, they'll think the goal is inachievable.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we're not naive, and it's also strange to sort of have this sort of false humility. So it's like Prabhupada used to say things like, you can fall down, but I cannot. So Prabhupada knew where he was at, you know. He wasn't thinking, I'm the most fallen, and therefore I'm like, I have no qualities at all. But then other times he was in that mood, right, of like being Dainya Bodhika mood, you know, that mood of seeing himself as very low, and then he writes these kind of purports, right, like the Dhruva Maharaj purport, you know, like taking, where the mother was the instructor, but Dhruva Maharaj, he was offered a plane, a Vaikuntha plane to go back to God, and he's about to take off, and then he was, wait a minute, stop, not going yet. Where's mom? And he looks around, and then it's all right, because mom's got her own plane, and she's flying right behind. There you go, boy. And they lived happily ever after. So, you know, there's a little variation for those who know the story. As I start the story, she was going, yeah, 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 we know that story, so okay. Put in little variation for it. Yeah, so Prabhupada writes in that purport that, yes, and as Dhruva delivered his mother, who was like his guru, I hope that one of my disciples may become a pure devotee and then deliver me. So, you know, it's like, how can he write like that? How can Prabhupada write like that? So you can see it has different moods at different times. So we also, sometimes we just think, you know, actually, I have no advancement at all. All the advancement I made, it's superficial, because I have no love for Krishna. Yes, it's true, you know. It's like, that's like my case. Like, I used to eat sugar in incredible quantities, confess. And I always had good connections. Because one of my earlier services in the Hare Krishna movement was that I was in charge of the Mangalartic sweets. But I had to collect them in the morning, and I had to bring them to the lunch program. They were distributed. But of course, some you could take, and some you could give away. And then the rest, you could cut equal portions of all sides of the burpees. Right? Make them a little smaller. Hollow them out with a spoon. And then nicely. Pretty nice. So there were some tricks that could be deployed to get the share. And I did whatever I could. Yeah, absolutely. Then I produced them for the lunch program. But then, of course, I didn't serve them all out. I was still hiding some, which I would eat. And then there were laddus as well for the lunch program. And I made sure I stashed about as many laddus as I served out, and then I'd eat them all. These days, I don't take sugar. Yeah? So it's like, wow, you know? I made so much advancement, finally, I got over the sugar, yeah. Maybe, but haven't got a grain of love for Krishna. So, what advancement have I made? I can be all about, look how renounced I am, you know. But the truth is, no love, therefore, all superficial. All superficial. Anybody else?
Maharaj, some devotees have told me that being a single woman is not an ashram.
Being a single woman is not an ashram. Did Srila Prabhupada say that?
No, I haven't.
Then I think Srila Prabhupada started an ashram that wasn't there in the Vedic times, the Brahmacharini ashram. And although Srila Prabhupada did say that women should get married, but he also encouraged some to just stay single. There were a few. But I think getting married is okay. But at the same time, it's not as good as you would want it to be. That I can tell you. Sorry for those who are about to. It's kind of okay. It's not bad, but it's also not that good. It's not that good that it's like, now I got everything I always needed. You know, this is it. And no, that's not what it's going to be. So, what should I say more? Something more about marriage. I can't say more about marriage. One thing I can say about marriage is that, you're always waiting for the perfect person who you never find, and this one's this one's weight and too light and that one's not right and this one. And in the end of the day, you know, just, you have to just make something good of it by trying to be Krishna conscious. That's all. Matching all the charts and all these things. Big deal. You know, astrology. You know. If the charts match, great. I think I mentioned something the other day that, like, you know, you have your charts and all the planets match, and therefore you can very, very comfortably in Maya together. You know what I mean? Or in Krishna consciousness. It's such a great match. Yeah, we're such a great match, perfect match, and therefore we're so happily drinking tea together and being in Maya. I mean, the real criterion is whether the planets are sometimes clashing and creating a few sparks or not, as long as you are trying to be Krishna conscious. That's the main thing. That's the bottom line about marriage. Make it KC and it's okay. Otherwise, it's a pit, a deep, dark pit. Word well is too soft. Under Kupra, new translation for under Kupra, a deep, dark pit. A hole in the ground. That's the point across. Anybody else? Yes.
You said we should be prepared to do anything for Krishna. If we just had to choose one thing that would please you most in right now, would it be, how much you said, would it be making others Krishna conscious?
Yeah.
Or helping them?
Yes. Yes. And how? That depends on your creativity, you know? It's like, I can appreciate that not every lady would feel comfortable on the street, and I can appreciate that, you know, where strange things do happen in the street, so... but there are so many ways. And prasadam always is powerful. That's a powerful way to come in. Opening first move on the chessboard. Move some prasadam. Then you are. Then come with the next move. How to spread Krishna consciousness.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Or Maharaj, you're just asking a question about the 3 months of nature.
Question about the 3 months of nature.
So they say in the spiritual world is the mode of goodness.
Visuddhasattva, purified goodness.
So is there also purified passion and purified ignorance as well?
It's like the material world is a reflection of the spiritual world. And it's like you have a tree reflecting in a body of water. And you see the tree in the water when there's no wind. That's the mode of goodness. So the mode of goodness reflects the nature of the spiritual world. So the activities of goodness are very close to the activities of the spiritual world. Then, when there's a little wind, then you see the tree reflected in the water and it begins to sort of look like this kind of tree. Right? That's when the mode of passion, then it becomes a perverted reflection. So it's also a reflection of the spiritual world, but it's perverted. And when you have the mode of ignorance, it's like so much wind and so many waves, you can't even recognize the tree anymore. It's just some brown spot in the water. So, in this way, the mode of ignorance is just the opposite from spiritual life.
opposite of the spiritual world. It is the deep darkness of material existence. Prabhupada was in New York and he was translating his books, and then in the night, and then someone knocked on the door, and then this girl came in, and she was on LSD or whatever, and then she just came into the room and just called out, "Bala." And Prabhupada followed the sannyas code. So, woman in the room, not allowed to be alone with her in the room. So, Prabhupada went out of the room. As she came in the room, Prabhupada was out of the room. But then she also came out of the room and she pulled the door closed, and it was one of those self-locking doors. So Prabhupada was locked out. And then the devotees came, and then Prabhupada said, when he saw that girl, he said, "It's the deepest, darkest darkness." That's tamagun. Complete forgetfulness of Krishna. So there's no such thing in the spiritual world. It doesn't exist. It's the perverted reflection of pure goodness. And passion is a little less perverted, you know. But passion means me. Passion means my senses. That's passion. Me and my senses. See? So that doesn't exist in the spiritual world. There it is, Krishna's senses. Krishna comes into the forest and Vrindadevi goes ahead, and Vrindadevi says to all the trees, "Quick, quick, quick, Krishna is coming. Start blossoming. Hurry up. Grow flowers." And all of the trees start to, like, you know, work overtime to produce flowers. Great. Krishna's coming to the forest. Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami writes like that. So no darkness, no ignorance, no passion. Only goodness, purified goodness. Not that kind of goodness. Life is so good, and you're so good, and I'm so good, and everything is so good. That maybe we'll take one more birth. The brahmanas on the bank of the Ganga, they are always engaged in worship. And then when they leave this world, they want to go to the heavenly planets, enjoy there, and then come back down in a brahminical family and do puja again, and go up again to the heavenly planets, and then come down again in the brahminical birth and do puja again. And in this way, they want to enjoy the mode of goodness, life after life. That's pretty good, but not good enough. Sorry, guys. And that's a big thing. Like, they call the burning ghat in Puri Swargadwar, gate to the heavenly planets. So they don't want to go back to Godhead. Not good enough. Therefore, Visuddhasattva, going back to Godhead. But there, you cannot satisfy your own senses. Only Krishna's senses. But Krishna satisfies the senses of his devotees. As he likes. When he likes. And when he doesn't, no problem. Asli Shiva Padaratam Pinastama. Whether you know, make me broken hearted by not being present before me, or like that. Devotee, you're always my worshipful Lord, unconditionally. That's Visuddhasattva. No lower modes. We are finished. Thank you so much, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.